Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to jazz pianist Marcus Roberts about his new album, Trio Crescent, as well as composing music for Tavis Smiley's upcoming theatrical production, Death of a King. Mass Media Arts Chair, Dr. Nsinga Burton, is here to chat about CAU's new course, Hip Hop Cinema. We also talk about our favorite hip-hop moments and more. Award-winning filmmaker Stanley Nelson Jr. is also here to chat about his new documentary, Tell Them We Are Rising, which puts a spotlight on the country's historically black colleges and universities. I talked to him about the inspiration behind the film and the cultural relevance of the project. I'll also be playing music from Marcus Roberts, as well as Public Enemy, and much more. But first, here's this week's casting buzz and entertainment news with Reva Blue.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Central Casting is currently casting a core group of Midtown Sound employees for the rest of the season until March 2018. New faces only. If selected, you would work 3 to 5 times every episode. You must have all-day availability, preferably looking for male and female who do background full-time. You must be between the ages of 20 to 30 with a height of 5'10 or shorter with an urban or hip look. You cannot have worked in any specific category before this season. If this is you, please send your full name and phone number to star@centralcasting.com. In other related entertainment news, in theaters this weekend, Sony Pictures' new animated new movie, The Star, a small but brave donkey and his animal friends become the unsung heroes of the first Christmas, and features the voices of Oprah Winfrey, Tyler Perry, Tracy Morgan, Christopher Plummer, Kelly Clarkson, and Gina Rodriguez. Dee Reese's critically acclaimed Mudbound will premiere on Netflix this weekend and is open in select theaters across the country. Two men return home from World War II to work on a farm in Mississippi when they struggle to deal with racism and adjusting to life after war. The film stars Mary J. Blige and Straight Outta Compton star Jason Mitchell. Go to WCLK.com to see the trailer and theater locations. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Cobb Energy Center, presenting the Dave Koz 20th Anniversary Christmas Tour on Friday, November the 24th at 8 p.m. The evening will feature Christmas classics and a Hanukkah medley from Koz, along with his guests, guitarist Peter White, pianist David Benoit, trumpeter Rick Braun, and vocalist Selena Albright. Ticket information is available at CobbEnergyCenter.com.
Hey, this is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
When you hear me shouting, I'm building me up.
Yes, my Lord.
When you hear me shouting, I'm building me up.
My Lord.
This earthly house is going to soon be gay. And my soul got a
My first guest is Emmy Award-winning documentary filmmaker Stanley Nelson Jr. The MacArthur Genius Fellow, writer, producer, and director was in town this week for the Atlanta premiere of his newest film, Tell Them We Are Rising. The 90-minute documentary examines the impact historically black colleges and universities, HBCUs, have had on American history, culture, and national identity. WCLK hosted the invitation-only screening, as well as a post-film discussion featuring Nelson, CAU President Dr. Ronald Johnson, and Kiplin Primus, host of WCLK's The Local Take. I caught up with Nelson right before the screening to chat about his inspiration and why this film was necessary considering today's social and political climate.
Well, good morning, Mr. Nelson, and welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Man, this is such a pleasure having you here in the studio. You've been here pretty much all week, actually, promoting this amazing film, Tell Them We're Rising, which we screen here at Clark Atlanta on Wednesday night. And such a pleasure having you here in the Upfront studios. What was the inspiration behind this? Because when you think of, you know, when I think of HBCUs, I'm from Orlando, Florida, born and raised there. And I just remember Bethune-Cookman College, Florida A&M University, Florida Memorial, when I think of HBCUs. I went to a majority school, but when I think about HBCUs, those are the first things that come to mind. And of course, I've been here for quite some time, so I think of Clark Atlanta and Morehouse and Spelman. But what was the inspiration behind this particular project?
Well, I mean, I think, honestly, there were a couple of inspirations. I think that, you know, it's one of the most important stories to us as African Americans. And I think that if I hadn't told the story, nobody else would, you know. And I think it is a real strong piece of who we are as African Americans. On a personal level, my father went to Howard. My mother went to Talladega. You know, if it hadn't been for those schools, they would have never gone to college. And my father and his brother were the first people in his family to graduate high school. Okay. My father went to Howard and then went on to become a dentist. And, you know, it changed his life and it changed my life and it changed my kids' life. And it'll change their lives going down through generations. So I just think, hey, you know, HBCUs in my family personally have been so important, but also to us as African Americans, also to this country. And I thought it was a great story to tell. You know, also as a filmmaker, look, they're great pictures, you know. all the schools, you know, that started right after the Civil War in 1865, well, a lot of them have pictures from 1865 and 1867 and 1871, you know, and 1885, these beautiful pictures, you know. One picture that always stands out for some reason, it's like of the Morris Brown football team from like 1910 or something, you know. It's just great. Whoever saw those pictures before. So, you know, we were able to use so many different pictures and footage of African Americans that had never been used before.
Right.
And that was really, really important.
So let's talk about, hitting the mic there, let's talk about some of that, compiling some of that research. Because when you think about putting a documentary like this together, it's hours of research and, like you said, going through photographs. So take us through that process of what that was like.
Well, you know, we had a team, and so we had really one woman who was our archival expert who just did photographs, and all, and she just, and we're talking about for 18 months, you know, just looking for photographs and getting photographs in. We had another woman who was just working, finding footage. You know, that's all she did. And then we had two other producers who would kind of lend some of their time to helping do that. So, you know, and we start looking for photos and footage on the first day and do that through the whole production, which is about a year and a half. So we're looking and looking and looking. What we found as we looked was that, you know, we had originally wanted to try to go to all 105 HBCUs and have work with all 105 HBCUs, but we found that was going to be impossible because some HBCUs, you know, they don't have pictures, they didn't save them, or they're in a box somewhere in an attic
or a library.
In the back of the library, yeah, yeah. But there's no librarian who can spend their time looking. So what happened was, you know, after a while, we ended up finding the schools that had the best archives, the most organized archives, and that we could work with the easiest. I should say the one thing that we tried to do, we came pretty close, was to use at least one photo from every school within the film.
Okay.
So we tried to get at least one photo from every school. I mean, and sometimes we didn't have to go to the school. Sometimes we could get it from somewhere else. We could get a picture of a school from, you know, the state archives or somewhere else. But we tried to get a photo of every school, at least in the film.
The question for African Americans has always been, what is education's purpose? Who controls it? And what is the relationship of education to the broader aspirations of our people?
The more the system denies you the chance to read and to write, the more that becomes a prize that you must have.
Black colleges were redefining what it meant to be Black in America. You were pursuing a career where intellect mattered.
An educated Black population could not be an enslaved Black population.
If you weren't out there demonstrating, then something had to be wrong with your school.
Now, I always ask this question whenever folks are putting together major projects like this. What did you learn about yourself through this process? And you've done, you know, so many other film projects on Black Panthers, Emmett Till, as well as the Jonestown murders. But what did you learn personally about yourself for this particular project?
you know, I think what I learned about myself was, you know, just kind of hang in there, you know, and it can get done. I mean, this was a real complicated film to make,
yeah.
You know, and it's hard to explain. But, you know, I mean, so we did a film a year and a half ago called The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution, which, you know.
Excellent.
All films are hard. All films are hard to make. But that film spans, you know, 6 years, 1966 to 1972. It's 6 years, you know, it's Huey and Bobby and you know, four other guys form this organization. You know, they it catches on. This happens. Huey gets shot. Huey gets arrested. Eldridge Cleaver flee. You know, it has these beats that you have to hit. And, you know, and so it's a contained story. HBCUs, we start in 1840 and go to today. So what's that, 177 years or something of history in 82 minutes, you know? We wanted to tell stories. And we knew the only way we could do it was tell stories, you know? So we had to figure out what are the stories that we tell that after you see the whole film, you have a good idea, you feel it, you know, in your bones, you know what HBCUs are and what they've meant, you know, and a little bit of where they may be going, that you feel that after you see this 82-minute film.
Right. Now, this is part of a sort of a national tour. You've been going to other HBCUs to debut or premiere the film. What has been the response so far from the other audiences?
The response has just been incredible. I mean, you know, this response has literally been beyond my wildest dreams. You know, I mean, it's been just crazy. I think, you know, look, we premiered at Sundance, and, you know, that's a largely white audience, and that was great. I mean, we got a standing ovation. They went wild. You know, it was great. And we knew we had something. But the first time we showed the film to a black audience, you know, people start showing up to the film in their colors, you know, and their fraternity and sorority outfits and stuff like that. And you know, they just, you know, and they start applauding during the film, you know, and every single joke they understand and every single thing they understand. And, you know, because it means something to us. I mean, I think that one of the things, one of the hallmarks of the HBCUs, and I've never said this before, and I almost don't know how to say it, is what it means to alumni. You know, like when you talk to somebody that graduated from an HBCU, their love of that experience is something very different than you see, you know, from anybody else. And I think that it's because it might be the only time in your life that you're around, you know, black people who are your age, and you're all going after the same thing.
Right.
You're all smart because you're at college, you know, and you're all going after the old thing, and you're free. You know, you're free in a way that you may not be for the rest of your life. You know, you may, you're now launched into the middle class, and, you know, so a good percentage of you are going to be working with white folks and around white folks. That's all well and good, but there's a freedom, you know, and a lifting of burden that happens for those 4 years at HBCUs, I think makes them really special to people.
Is there a story that you would just love to, that you haven't tackled, but you would just love to get your hands on to tell?
You know, I've been really lucky, you know, to be able to tell stories that I really want to tell. We're working on a film on Miles Davis.
Okay.
You know, and I say be careful what you wish for. You know, I'm a real lover of Miles Davis, you know. But, you know, it's not easy to make a film about a genius, you know. You know, you're trying to transform one kind of genius, a musical genius, you know, onto film. So, you know, it's challenging, but it is, in some ways, it was a project I had dreamed of for years. So, you know, I got to remember that I'm lucky to be able to do it.
Right. All right. Well, thank you so much. And we look forward to seeing this again on February the 19th, 2018 at 9 p.m. on PBS.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, Upfront listeners, you can now follow us on Instagram under Upfront the Show. We'll have exclusive news, giveaways, and much more. That's Upfront the Show on Instagram.
89 the number, another summer. Sound of the funky drummer. Music hitting your heart, cause I know you got soul.
You just heard a clip from the iconic rap
group Public Enemy and Fight the Power. The song was featured in Spike Lee's landmark film Do the Right Thing and is just one of the many cinema classics and songs that will be examined in a new course here at Clark Atlanta University titled Hip Hop Cinema. The class will be taught by Mass Media Arts Chair Dr. Nsinga Burton and is being offered beginning spring 2018. I caught up with Burton to chat about what students can expect and much more.
Well, good morning, Dr. Burton, and welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, Ray.
Yeah. Well, I want to say, first of all, congratulations on becoming the chair of our Mass Media Arts Department. I was so excited when the information came across our email. I was like, yay!
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
to be back,
yeah.
rather.
Yeah, because you were here before in another capacity.
As a visiting professor.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and then came back and now you're running things.
That's what they tell me. I feel like I'm being run sometimes, but yeah, I'm supposedly running things. Yeah.
Well, we've got some exciting news. You're actually bringing a brand new course to Clark Atlanta University next spring. We're talking about hip hop cinema, and really excited about this. This is a course that is being offered to our juniors and seniors, and you're putting sort of a spotlight on 12 iconic films that represent hip hop culture. I'm looking at the list, and we'll get to that list, but let's talk about why you decided, because I don't think we've ever had a course like this before at Clark Atlanta University.
Yeah, so, and this is interesting with us watching a documentary yesterday about
right,
HBCUs,
right.
because the first time I took a course like this was when I was a graduate student at the University of Southern California in the School of Cinema Television, and it was probably my favorite class the entire time I was there. And when I spent some time at NYU as a scholar in residence, they had a whole like hip hop curriculum, and they did a lot of work with the Hip Hop Theater Network and Hip Hop Action Network and what have you. And so, and my dissertation, ironically, is actually on hip hop.
Okay.
It looks at women in hip hop and their career trajectories.
Wow.
So I say all of that to say, when I came here and I looked at some of our course offerings, I was surprised, especially with all the CLK has done, not only in the jazz space, but also introducing, you know, a lot of the world to not only local jazz artists, but also local hip hop artists.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly people who've come through here as interns. And
or even
you.
Those artists that sort of cross that line.
Yes.
When you talk about Erykah Badu or
yes.
Common or Tillip Kweli.
Yes.
Or The Roots.
Yes.
Yeah.
People who are in that genre or
yeah.
that category. So I was surprised that a course, you know, was not on the books. Music journalism is not on the books. These are courses that are, I think that would enhance not only the curriculum, because they're courses that actually will teach students about their rich legacy and musical legacy and about the industries. But also they are specific to Clark Atlanta University, because Clark Atlanta has played such a major role in the formation of what I would call a hip hop aesthetic in cinema and certainly in music.
Okay.
Sydney Shaw, when did you fall in love with hip hop?
When I heard Kango Crew and Get Fresh Crew.
Well, I don't think you understood the question, so I'm gonna ask you again. Sid, when did you fall in love with hip hop?
Dre. I've been in love with you from the first day I saw you.
All right, I got a follow-up question. Why did it take you so long to say that?
Because I was scared and hard-headed.
So that was a clip from one of my favorite films, Brown Sugar, starring Taye Diggs and Sanaa Lathan. And man, just one of the many films that are going to be on spotlight. When did you first fall in love with hip hop?
Man, you know, I'm an East Coaster. So it's impossible, like, to separate my identity. I am hip hop.
Right.
In my look, in the words of Brown Sugar,
right.
I am hip hop. So it's really difficult for me to separate myself from hip hop culture, because it was such a defining culture in my community. You know, as a Black person, as someone, I'm from Virginia, so you know, whether it's Timbaland, Missy, Teddy Riley, really, right, really put Virginia on the map in that space. And then you know, everybody has family in New York, so going to the Bronx and going to Harlem for the holidays and like getting turned on to the music and the culture and going to the shows. We call them shows, where you know we would go see, you know, all, you know, Richmond, Virginia, which is my hometown, was a watering hole for hip hop artists. And so they would, I call it a watering hole because they came to get money in Richmond. And so they would do shows in the Richmond Coliseum. So I'd seen everybody who's considered a legend probably by the time I was 13. Wow. I mean, everybody from Dougie Fresh to Run DMC to the Fat Boys. I mean, you name them, you know, the Juice Crew, like even people that we don't talk about as much anymore. So I've always been in love with hip hop. It's a part of my identity and who I am. And even though I have a PhD, it's not, you know, the two are not mutually exclusive.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned that because that film is in spotlight. Boys in the Hood. We also have Do the Right Thing, mm-hmm. Juice, City of God. How did you come up with these films? Because there are so many out there, I think, that touch on hip hop culture. But how did you come up with these 12?
Well, and that's not a definitive list, but because one of the things we're going to do in this class is that we're going to really discuss and figure out what we qualify as a hip hop aesthetic in film and cinema.
Okay.
How do we define it? You know, how do we also define that in terms of narrative and stylistic elements in filmmaking? And then we're going to put together a master filmography of what we deem to be hip hop films or hip hop cinema based on those categories.
Okay.
And so, but these films that I picked out to highlight this, that will be highlighted in the class, I looked at the history of hip hop film, whether you think about Wild Style, right, or Crush Groove, right, all the way up to ATL,
right,
and
Beat Street,
it's just so many films.
Yeah.
But then I thought about it from a global perspective, and you have films like Dancehall Queen. I would argue that The Harder They Come is definitively a hip hop film, and the, you know, City of God, which is Brazilian, so La Haine, which is French, which is probably, I would say, top three hip hop films of all time.
Wow.
And then I also thought about subject matter. So like slam, which is really about a lot about poetry and slam poetry. But it really intersects with a lot of different issues like mass incarceration or what have you. And it's in D.C. Right. And so that's, you know, an area that we don't really think about musically outside of like Go-Go.
Go-Go, I was going
right?
to say. Yeah.
So Go-Go rules D.C. But there also is that hip hop aesthetic and Go-Go's influence on hip hop culture, which a lot of people don't acknowledge or discuss. But a lot of that, you know, Kid and Play,
EU,
you know, what have you. Like it's a lot of it.
Chuck Brown. That whole
thing. Or, and even Scott Storch. Like stuff now is like based on Go-Go beats and Go-Go riffs and what have you. So that's how I kind of picked. Like I thought about location. I thought about diversity, representation. Dancehall Queen, which is out of Jamaica and also talks about women, just another girl in the IRT, women directors. Mm. So I was trying to give students a broad representation of what looks like hip hop cinema, who are the creators, right? So I'm looking at who are the directors, who are the cinematographers, that kind of thing. The types of music and what's connected to hip hop culture, whether it's like poetry or go-go or, you know, television or what have you. And then really that historical trajectory of Black cultural production overall and what that means for students today.
Now, what do you want them to walk away with? Because it's you know, I have my interns, and sometimes mm-hmm. I'll mention a film, and they're like, I've never seen that. And it's like, how have you not seen The Color Purple? Or how have you not seen The Wiz? You know, those films. So
I'm
is
a
this,
film head, but I've never seen The Wiz.
You're not a film head.
Calm down.
So what is the ultimate takeaway that you want the students to get from this course?
I want students to think about, and I know they do anyway, but I really want them to think about hip-hop in a much more complex way, in a much more thoughtful and intentional way, in a way that even, you know, when we're thinking about trap and, you know, all of these different types, bounce of hip hop music or music related to hip hop. I want them to think about it as part of a historical lineage of not only music and cultural development and inheritance, but also production and the historical production of Black culture that comes through music and film. and what that means for them and what they want to accomplish going forward.
Okay, so got to ask, with a course like this, are you going to have, since Atlanta is now the new hip hop capital of the world, are we going to have maybe some classes that will feature some of these artists? And
that's the goal. So that's what I'll be working on over the break. So yeah, I have some connects. So I'll see who, and you know, Shaka Zulu's got to come up
here.
And hopefully that'll lead to Luda, which will lead to T.I. And some of these other folks. But you know, I'm showing Atlanta. I would like to show Atlanta and really have Tip come in and talk about it, which would be awesome. They're also, you know, some documentaries I want to talk about. And so maybe have a filmmaker or two come in. So, yeah, there's definitely, that's on the horizon. Like, we definitely want to make that happen.
All right. Well, Dr. Burton, thank you so much for stopping by up front. We're really excited about this new course, Hip Hop Cinema. It is a new class that is coming spring 2018. And that will be offered to our juniors and seniors here at Clark Atlanta University. Where can people, if they want to get information about this, where can they go?
Oh, they can go to Clark Atlanta's course catalog, which is available to everyone on the actual website. If you go on the registrar's, on the regular website and just go under banner and hit course schedule, you can see the class and the description and everything else.
All right. Mm-hmm. We'll see you in class.
Thank you.
All right.
Support for WCLK programming comes from Marietta's New Theater in the Square, presenting The Gift of the Magi 2.0. This adaptation centers around a local 1950s streetcar driver who is struggling to stay afloat during the Atlanta transit strike. The show opens on the 67th anniversary of the strike's end. The Gift of the Magi 2.0 runs November 16th through December 3rd. Ticket information is available at 770-426-4800 or online at theaterinthesquare.net.
Hey, y'all, what's going on? It's your boy Devon Franklin, author of the new book, The Hollywood Commandments, and you're listening to Upfront with your boy Ray Cornelius. Stay right here.
That was the musical genius of pianist Marcus Roberts and his trio performing It Could Happen to You. The acclaimed musician is teaming up with media mogul Tavis Smiley for the upcoming theatrical production Death of a King. The show will commemorate the upcoming 50th anniversary of Dr. King's death and brings together elements of visual imagery and live music. Roberts has been tapped to compose original songs for the show, along with Tony-winning Broadway director Kenny Leon, who will serve as the project's creative consultant. I talked to Roberts this week about the collaboration. We also talked about his new album, Trio Crescent, which debuted on Friday and is a celebration of John Coltrane's album, Crescent.
Well, good morning, Marcus Roberts, and welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing just fine. We're so excited, super excited to be talking to you. You're a very busy guy.
Yeah, I try to do everything I can. Music is such an eternal, vast thing that it just takes most of my time.
Yeah. Now you're teaming up with Tavis Smiley for a new live theatrical experience about the life and death of Dr. Martin Luther King. We're talking about Death of a King, and that kicks off this coming new year in January, and it will actually take you guys across the country all the way through the spring. You're actually composing some original music for this show. So how did you get involved with this particular project? Because this is going to be major.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited. Tavis Smiley very kindly asked me to participate in this project because he wanted an additional component. He, of course, put out this wonderful book called Death of a King, which I actually read before we even decided to do this project, where he talks about Dr. King's final year and many of the struggles that he had to endure the last year of his life, which were significant and very compelling. And ultimately, you know, that struggle is very inspirational because it shows you what you have to do if you're going to stay true to your convictions and beliefs, even when the chips are down against you, you know. And Tavis came to me and said, look, I'd like music in addition to my reading and showing wonderful images of King throughout his life in that final year. So what I had to do is I read his script, we met, and we decided collaboratively, you know, what the music should be, what mood would be required to capture the emotion and the feeling behind those images or the words that Tabitha is speaking. So I do think it's going to be a very, very powerful presentation that hopefully will do two things: educate the public about that final year, which a lot of people don't know, but ultimately, at a time in our country where we have such political division and many issues that seem to separate us as opposed to combine us together, hopefully it'll do a little bit to help lead us on a path towards the society becoming more of a collected community of like-minded people towards these things that King fought for. Freedom for everyone, wow. Justice for everyone, and to try to limit all the things that divide us.
Now, how? Because this is, to me, is what I can only imagine. This was a super task. So, how did you sort of come up with the songs? What type of research did you have to do, I guess, to sort of pull that whatever the sound is for the show? How did you pull that sound together?
Well, I have to say, yeah, you're right. It really did require pretty much all the knowledge of music that I have, because the thing about Dr. King, he's not, I didn't want to reduce him to, he's like a Baptist preacher and we're just going to use, like only gospel music to describe him. And of course, that would be the major style that would work. But Dr. King met Duke Ellington once and they had a very, very important meeting together. Both men respect each other. Unfortunately, they only met, I think, once.
Okay.
But what I had to do was each song almost demanded a different style to capture the mood. So there's one scene, for example, where I wrote a song called Turbulence, where Dr. King is on an airplane and he's very depressed over what had just happened when he gave his big Beyond Vietnam speech at the church in New York. And he's on the plane and he's, he's in a turbulent state. So that piece required almost like a lot of dissonance and almost like a mixture of modern classical music and jazz to pull that off. And then there are pieces that, like a piece like Take Me to Church, is like good old school gospel because he's coming home to Atlanta to his home church where he found peace. And so there are many, many movements that just required different styles. And honestly, what I did is I just pictured it in my head. I tried to picture that feeling and I just sit at the piano and I would try things out. And what I would do is when I came up with an idea that I thought would work, I'd call Tavis up. I said, look, T.S., what do you think? I'm going to email you a file of this. You tell me if this speaks to the scene, that you envisioned for this part and we talk about it. And I have to say, he was really, really into it. And it's frankly some of the most exciting work, that I've done. And I think it's very relevant for this time.
Right. Now, this also, this project also features the creative consulting from Kenny Leon, Tony winning director Kenny Leon. Did you have an opportunity to also work with him as well?
Well, we're going to work with him. I'll get a chance. I've not had the pleasure of meeting him yet, but in December, I'm going to go out to California and we're going to rehearse and really put the final touches on the show. So we'll all be there together, and that'll be a very exciting thing. I'm really looking forward to meeting him and learning from him because this is a theatrical production, and he's an Emmy Award winning director and he knows what this thing is going to need to be. So we'll all collaborate and, of course, weigh in on things. But his expertise will be very, very, we're very excited.
We just heard some new music from your album, which you actually dropped on yesterday. We're talking about Trio Crescent, which is a nod to the late, great John Coltrane. And this is actually being released sort of, I guess, in honor of the 50th anniversary of Mr. Coltrane's death. What made you decide to do this type of tribute album?
Well, I actually think of this more of an album of influence and celebration than tribute, even though, of course, we always want to honor our masters. the only danger in calling it a tribute record is that it kind of implies that it's not necessarily relevant right now, but that the person is important historically. So what I wanted to do in putting this record out and playing this music is do a couple things. One, John Coltrane has had a huge influence on my compositional style, the way I play. I mean, he was able to put together a musical style and philosophy that had, a folk essence, meaning that some of the stuff that Coltrane would play, it sounded like somebody might have hummed it 500 years ago, right? But then he puts it inside of this brilliantly conceived package of very, very complicated modern concepts. So to put those two things together has always intrigued me. So I'm always looking for a way to marry the past with the future and to produce our present. And he's been very inspirational and influential for me in that way. And my trio, we feel that John Coltrane, who also wrote music that was relevant at the time and political at the time in terms of a lot of the injustices that were going on. He wrote Alabama in response to the church bombing in Alabama. You know, he specifically wrote that song for that. So his music, as he said, I want it to be a force for good. And that's ultimately what we as artists want to do. We want to give people some relief from a lot of the pain and suffering of everyday life and bring some joy and some reflection into it.
Right. Is there a particular song that you just really enjoyed when you guys were, you know, putting it together? Was there one that you just really just like, man, I just love doing this particular song?
Wow. Well, that's a great question. You know, in different ways, all of them. But for me, Crescent in particular is so powerful. Wise One as well, because, you know, the feeling of it, the feeling of love for people and humanity and that feeling of coming together, you just get a good feeling after you hear that music or play it. And I almost feel like when we play that suite for people, we're both on the stage and in the audience because we're benefiting from it spiritually too. And when it really goes well, Coltrane made a statement years ago, like when he felt really connected with the audience, that it became like a fifth member of his band. And we kind of feel that way too. There's a connection that is spiritual that kind of goes beyond what we consciously know as musicians. And I think in life, a lot of times you're reaching for those brief moments where your subconscious mind gives you information that you didn't really earn, that you didn't really know, that you couldn't really understand. But somehow you know exactly what to do. And I think that's the power of art and the importance of art in our culture.
All right. Well, Marcus Roberts, thank you so much for stopping by the Upfront Studios. We're really excited about your new project, Trio Crescent, which, again, is a nod to the late, great John Coltrane. You'll also be appearing in a Tavis Smiley's theatrical production of Death of a King. Again, that kicks off in January. You guys will actually be here in Atlanta April 2nd. Monday, April 2nd, over at the Cobb Energy Center at 8 p.m. So we can't wait to see you guys when you come. You can check out this and more information about Marcus's album as well as Death of a King at WCLK.com. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you so much for listening to today's show. I'd really like to thank all of my special guests, Stanley Nelson Jr., Dr. Nsinga Burton, and Marcus Roberts. I would also like to thank my engineer, Mark Angel, and you. Please join us next Saturday, November 25th at 9 a.m. for another exciting edition of Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.